So which pickaxe are you using there? Can
it's,
you see?
Yeah, well, I think it's, I can, by feel, I can tell it's the small one.
Small Sharpie?
Yeah, the small sharp one.
You should maybe switch to Big Blunty, because I'm just, based on my calculations.
You think we're going to hit some big rocks here?
Well, we just got to speed it up.
Oh.
I'm doing the podcast, by the way.
Oh, we've started.
Yes, good evening. This is John Hodgman.
And this is Jonathan Colton.
And we are podcasting for you here from beneath Galapagos Art Space in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, where we are gradually, slowly tunneling in to do our next Little Grey Book lecture, number 31, this Thursday evening at 7:30 p.m.
Yeah, it's gradually is the word for it. There's been a lot of tunneling going on so far.
But based on my calculations, this is where we should be at this point. We've been in bedrock for about 14 hours, and pretty soon we should be able to start tunneling up, and then we can hook up with the remote robot surveillance that you set up, the little spidery robots that you built with cameras on them.
Mm-hmm.
And the transmission will come through, and then we'll be able to see that the coast is clear. And then we can continue tunneling up, and that's when I think we should bring out the diamond drill.
Yeah.
Then using suction cups, we'll get into the space itself and be able to do the show.
Well, it's a good plan. I got to say, I'm going to be glad to get out of the bedrock, because it's backbreaking work. It really is. Yeah.
Well, it's been so long since we've done a show. Galapagos kind of didn't really have time for us. So I figured this was the only way we were going to be able to get in.
Yeah. Sometimes you have to resort to extreme measures, even legal ones.
Tiptoe in, tiptoe out. That's what I say.
Yeah.
And leave our calling card.
Right. I didn't actually bring my box of cards. Do you have your cards with you?
No, but I was speaking more metaphorically. The calling card would be an entire evening's of worth of entertainment.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
That way they will know it's us, because they'll see us.
They'll say, Jonathan Colton and John Hodgman and the Little Grey Book Lectures have been here. In fact, they're happening right now.
Right. We can tell they've been here because we can see them on stage doing their show.
And then before their goons jump us,
uh-huh,
slip back down through the tunnel again.
Because they won't even know the tunnel's there.
And swiftly mortar it over.
Hmm. Okay.
And they'll never know it was there.
That sounds good.
Yeah. I think it's so perfect to not fail.
I agree.
So how's the digging going?
It's pretty hard. Do you know when the rest of the digging team is going to get here?
Well, we have those spidery robots, you know, but they're deployed already. They've already snuck through the ducts.
Right. I guess I meant somebody to help me dig.
I don't know. You know, my daughter is off with the child pickpockets, so I can't really get her to help. And Christine is working, so that's not going to work.
Wasn't there a team of people who was going to help me dig?
I didn't really see why we should do it any differently than we do anything.
Well, it seems like we have a lot of shovels, and I can only use one of them at a time.
Yeah, well, again, the diamond drill's coming up, and if it'll make it easier for you, maybe what we should do is, you know, we should play some previous material that was recorded at previous Little Grey Book lectures, and that'll give you, you know, encouragement. I could just dial it up here. I brought quite a few with me.
All right. Why don't you just dial something up,
in my velvet bag.
Okay.
You know, you remember Todd Pruzan, of course.
I do.
A contributor to many Little Grey Book lectures.
Yes.
In the past.
Yes.
And I hope the future.
I hope so.
Well, he has a book coming out. Did you know that?
I had heard that.
The Clumsiest People in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And it is based, in no small part, on a Little Grey Book lecture that he performed in July 2002, back when everyone used kerosene lanterns.
Right. What was that? What was the show, the subject of that show?
The subject of that show was Europe versus America.
Mm.
And, well, why don't I just dial it up here and you can take a listen and it'll consider a little pickaxe in music.
Okay.
It's not music.
Yeah. I'll keep digging, I guess.
Yeah.
My dear little children, God has covered your bones with flesh. Your flesh is soft and warm. I'm not supposed to touch the mic. In your flesh, there is blood. God has put skin outside, and it covers your flesh and blood like a coat. How kind it was of God to give you a body. I hope that your body will not get hurt. Will your bones break? Yes, they would, if you were to fall down from a high place, or if a cart were to go over them. How easy it would be to hurt your poor little body. If it were to fall into the fire, it would be burned up. If a great knife were run through your body, the blood would come out. If a great box were to fall on your head would be crushed. 11 days from now, on July 14th, 2002, a very small number of scholars of forgotten writers will recall the 200th anniversary of the birth of the strangest and most terrifying best-selling children's author of the 19th century, a woman whose prose intended nothing but to drive spikes of icicles into the hearts of Protestant boys and girls worldwide. Despite selling millions of copies of her books during her lifetime and long after her death, it's likely that on July 14, only her descendants will recall the birth of Favell Lee Mortimer, writer, teacher, certifiable nut job. That's her picture up there. F.L. Mortimer wrote stridently God-fearing, xenophobically hysterical children's books for more than 40 years. Ornate Victorian prose was in vogue, but Mrs. Mortimer targeted her audience with a cleverly authoritative voice we might call the second person presumptuous, reading less like Edith Wharton than Sunday school sermons delivered by a very unstable teacher. Mrs. Mortimer wrote 16 books, and tonight I'll read from the book that should rest any debate of Europe versus America. Mrs. Mortimer was born just north of London on July 14, 1802, into the Bevan family, which became part of the Barclays banking empire. She grew up very rich and very Quaker until she turned 25, when she could take it no more and turned evangelical. But she didn't take her fire and brimstone public until 1833. Now, a few minutes ago, I was reading from the opening chapter of Mrs. Mortimer's first book, which was called The Peep of Day, or A Series of the Earliest Religious Instruction the Infant Mind is Capable of Receiving. In a 1950 article in The New Yorker, Mrs. Mortimer's grandniece, Rosalind Constable, called The Peep of Day one of the most outspokenly sadistic children's books ever written. The book was an instant smash, published anonymously, and all of Mortimer's subsequent 15 books were published under the coquettish legend by the author of The Peep of Day, etc., etc. Actually, it's ampersand C, which I love, but and C and C. The Peep of Day was translated into 38 languages, including Umbundu, Cree Ojibwe, Matabele, Orion, Marathi Balbod, and French. In 1841, the author married the cruel, violent Reverend Thomas Mortimer, who died 9 years later. The author of The Peep of Day had no kids, possibly because she spent a good part of her marriage trying to leave him. As a widow living near Wales, Mrs. Mortimer adopted several orphans and animals. Sadly, she didn't know jack about animals. In the Times of London in 1933, Mrs. Mortimer's nephew recalls how she inadvertently killed several of her pets. She tried to clean her donkey by driving it blindfolded into the ocean with its cart still attached, and the donkey freaked out and drowned. She once bathed a lamb with soap and water, and decided the most efficient method to dry it would be to bury it up to its nostrils in sand. Her nephew also recalls, in the Times of London, 1933, she could not believe that it was good for her parrot never to rest its back, and when she took it to bed with her, compelled it by slaps to lie on its back. The unhappy bird died from being washed with soap and water and dried before the kitchen fire. Nuts. Only one thing terrified Mrs. Mortimer more than the wrath of God, and that is other people. She wrote three books to instruct British Protestant children about the foolish customs and filthy habits of virtually every country in the world, including her own. The first of the three, published in the United States exactly 150 years ago, was called The Countries of Europe Described, with anecdotes and numerous illustrations. Her innovative You Are There format belies the evidence that she never set foot outside of England, according to a 1901 biography of the author of The Peep of Day, which was called, obviously, The Author of The Peep of Day. Still, what she lacked in journalistic skills, she more than compensated with brute force. Mrs. Mortimer was a cultural absolutist, scolding everybody and reserving the most venom for Catholics. Every chapter in The Countries of Europe Described, after slinging its barbs, eventually returns to the choice of faith. Mrs. Mortimer probably meant well, but as a guidebook, The Countries of Europe Described depicts a very lonely planet indeed. Let's now turn to the most, shall we say, persuasive passages of The Countries of Europe Described from 1852. London. What country do you love best? Your own country. I know you do. Every child loves his own country best. Let us talk together about England. Is London a pleasant city? No. Because there is so much fog and smoke. That makes it dark and black. Is London a pretty city? No. Because it is not built by the seaside or on high hills. The poor people live in narrow alleys or streets and in close places called courts into which no carriages can drive. There are schools for little ragged children, such as could not go to a neat Sunday school. These children have been taught at home to steal and lie and swear. But some of them listen to their kind teachers while they are telling them about God and Christ and heaven and hell. Ireland. What sort of people are the Irish? The merriest, drollest people in the world. They are very kind and good-natured when pleased, but if affronted, are filled with rage. The poor men are fond of drinking and keeping company with their friends, but they often quarrel with them, and then they call them names and throw things at them and cover them with bruises. You see, they are passionate, though they wish to be kind. They forget themselves and act in a very wicked manner. Germany. The ladies are very industrious, and wherever they go, they take their knitting. They are as fond of their knitting needles as the gentlemen are of their pipes. The number of stockings they make would surprise you. How much better to knit than to smoke? When they are at home, the ladies spend a great deal of time in cooking. They also spin and have a great deal of linen of their own spinning locked up in their great chests. Can they do nothing but knit and cook and spin? Yes. They can play on the piano and the harp and sing very sweetly, but they are not fond of reading useful books. When they read, it is novels about people who have never lived. It would be better to read nothing than such books. Iceland. In the country, as you travel along, you will often see a farmhouse with a church and a few huts near. The farmhouse looks neat outside, but if you go into the house, you will soon wish to run out again. It is so dark and dirty. If you grope along the dark passage, you will come to a room at the end full of beds and full of litter. The people heap wooden dishes, spinning wheels, and old clothes in confusion upon the beds, and they never dust the furniture, nor scrub, nor even sweep the rooms. The little windows in the roof, not bigger than your hand, will not open. The house is never aired. What an unpleasant place. Italy. What sort of people live in Italy? They are very dark because the sun shines so much. They have dark hair and eyes, not those bright, merry black eyes you see in France, but more sad and thoughtful eyes. They may well be sad, for their country is in a sad state. It is full of fine houses and palaces, empty and going to decay. But that is not the worst part. The people are ignorant and wicked. Their religion is the Roman Catholic. It is dreadful to think what a number of murders are committed in Italy. Even boys, instead of fighting with their hands, take up stones to throw at each other. And men take out their knives and cut each other. Others, instead of showing their anger at the time, keep it in and watch an opportunity of murdering their enemy. The houses are very dirty, especially the staircase and the doorway. But the Italians think more of painting their ceilings and placing statues in their halls than of keeping their houses clean. The English think a clean home is better than a pretty one.
John, I'm sorry to...
Podcast.
No,
podcast,
I know. I just podcast. Have to pause because there seems to be water pouring into the tunnel.
Yeah, that's correct. That's good. We're getting close.
What is this? Is this is the river?
Reflecting pool. We're going up through the reflecting pool.
Why would we go up through the reflecting pool?
That way people won't notice the hole.
What happens when all the water drains out?
I'm going to seal up the tunnel behind us, and the reflecting pool will just look lower. It'll fill up the tunnel to this point. And then we can just swim out. And when we have to leave very quickly, you see, we just dive into the reflecting pool like we always do, but this time there's a hole in the bottom. And then we will swim down and drill through the seal that I'm going to make.
Okay, so I guess I kind of wish I had been prepared to dig up into water.
Oh, no.
I don't.
I have a snorkel.
No, I know you have a snorkel, but I'm saying if you had planned this, it would have been nice to.
You can have my nose plugs.
Okay.
Can we listen to the rest of Todd Cruzan now? This is all gonna. Believe me. This is all gonna work out.
All right.
Now, for some reason, most of Mrs. Mortimer's venom seemed to be reserved for a country that would seem fairly innocent by today's standards, and I'll read a bit of this chapter because it's very good. Portugal. Portugal is very much like Spain. The people are alike, the customs are alike, the plants and animals are alike, and though the languages are not the same, there is a great likeness between them. Yet there is some difference between these countries. What? Though the Portuguese are indolent, like the Spaniards, they are not so grave and sad and silent. They are proud, like the Spaniards, but they are more deceitful. They have black eyes and hair and dark complexions, like the Spaniards, but they have whiter teeth, for they never smoke, and it is smoking paper cigars which spoils the teeth in Spain. But though the Portuguese do not smoke, they have another bad habit. They take snuff continually, the poor as well as the rich, the young as well as the old. When a Portuguese wishes to be friends with you, he offers some snuff, and he would be very much affronted if you were not to take some. The Portuguese are so proud that they will not carry burthens. That's what it says, burthens. They say it is like a beast to carry burthens, but they will draw wheelbarrows. The Spaniards do just the contrary. They will carry burthens, but will not draw a wheelbarrow. The Portuguese language is not as beautiful as the Spanish. It has more hissing sounds and is spoken in harsh and squeaking tones. No people in Europe are as clumsy and awkward with their hands as the Portuguese. It is curious to see how badly the carpenters make boxes and the smiths make keys. The carts are very ill-made. They are drawn by two oxen, and as they move slowly along, the wheels make a loud creaking noise, which almost stuns people of other countries. But the Portuguese do not mind the sound and say it is of use, for then there will be no danger of two carts meeting in the narrow roads. Portugal, like Spain, is filled with robbers. The laws are not obeyed, and the wicked often escape without being punished. The religion is Roman Catholic, and the people are very ignorant. A traveler once sat down by a stone fountain close to the road that he might talk to all the people who came there to draw water. He went there every day and talked to a great many, and he found that very few had ever heard that there was such a book as the Bible, and none had ever seen it. How ignorant people must be who have never been taught what God says in the Bible. They do not know what can keep them safe or make them happy. Some places look pretty at a distance, which look very ugly when you come up to them. Lisbon is one of these places. If you were to cross the Atlantic in a ship and to go up the broad river Tagus, you would very soon see Lisbon. It is built just at the mouth of the river upon some hills. When first you see Lisbon, the white houses glittering in the sun, the balconies adorned with flowers and shrubs, and the lovely orange groves, you cry out, "What a beautiful city!" But when you have landed on the shore and begin to walk in the streets, you do not like it well. For the streets are not swept clean like those of Madrid. They are full of litter and rubbish, and troops of dirty dogs are seen on every side, and very unpleasant smells come from the houses, and in most of the streets there is no pavement. But if you do not like Lisbon when you walk in it, you will like it worse when you live there, because it is full of stinging insects. At night, the mosquitoes annoy you every moment. Sometimes snakes find their way into the houses and frighten children very much. But there are worse creatures than snakes in Lisbon. There are many murderers there. It is believed that many dead bodies are thrown by wicked people into the Tagus. At the last day, these dead bodies will rise, and the men who slew them will be judged, though perhaps they have never yet been found out. Now, at this point, I would like to survey the crowd briefly and find out if there are any actual Europeans in the audience. And you are from which country? You're from Wales. Could you come up here, please? And your name is? Allison. You speak English very well for a Welsh person. Allison, I would like to read to you about your country of Wales, according to F.L. Mortimer, the author of The Peep of Day. Wales. What sort of people are they? Their figures are short and stout. They have broad faces with fresh colors. They are passionate when offended, but very honest and industrious. The women will even knit as they walk along to market. There are not nearly as many thieves in Wales as there are in England. The Welsh are fond of music. Their favorite instrument is the harp. Though the Welsh are not very clean, they make their cottages look clean by whitewashing them every year. And sometimes they whitewash the pigsties too. The women dress in blue cloth cloaks and beaver hats to keep them dry in the rain. They go riding over the hills on their little ponies. The Welsh eat common food, such as cheese, leeks and onions, and oatmeal porridge. I think you've had enough, right? That's enough abuse. Thanks, Allison. I just want to read about two more countries, which are two more peoples, which are different from most of Europe because they make the offense of not being either Protestant nor Catholic. And we'll start with Turkey. This land is very different from all the other countries in Europe, and this is the reason: it has a different religion. All the other countries are called Christian, but Turkey is a Mohammedan country. What is that? Once there was a man called Muhammad who told people he was a prophet sent from God, but he was a false prophet and a wicked man. He wrote a book called the Quran. Oh. I'm sorry. I was just kidding. Is Salman Rushdie here? He wrote a book called the Quran and filled it with foolish stories and absurd laws and horrible lies. Don't worry, we're moving on to the Jews now. The Jews are not idle like the Poles, but try in every way to get money. It is they who keep all the inns, and wretched inns they are, because the Jews are very dirty. See that large shed under which horses and carts are kept? At one end, there is a sort of house. It is the inn. Go in at that low-covered doorway, taking care not to hit your head, unless you are only a little boy or girl. The floor has no carpet, nor even boards, no, nor bricks. It is the bare earth. There are boards in one corner with some straw on them. Would you rather sleep there or in that little dark room beyond? Look in, it is full of dirty beds and children of all sizes. When will the Jews believe in him who came into their land 1,800 years ago? It is because they do not believe in the Lord Jesus Christ that God allows them to be so unhappy. Countries of Europe described: F.L. Mortimer, certifiable nut job, John Hodgman, me, you. Happy 4th of July. Have a safe and happy 4th.
Ah, air. Sweet, sweet air.
Perfect. That snorkel didn't work out the way I expected it to.
No, it didn't work out very well.
When you're fully immersed in water.
No, it actually is not a self-contained underwater breathing apparatus. It's more of a, you have to actually have it poking into the air somewhere.
Yeah, well, that's okay, though.
Well, we seem to have made it into...
We've emerged from the reflecting pool.
Yeah.
And we've climbed onto the cold concrete floor of Galapagos. And now that we're here, I think we can safely announce that the next Little Gray Book lecture, number 31, will in fact occur on Thursday, June 16th at 7:30 p.m. at Galapagos at 70 North 6th Street between Kent and Wythe Streets in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. And I guess we need to start setting up here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is the subject of this one?
The subject is how to commit the perfect crime.
Well, we've demonstrated that already, haven't we?
So far, so good. Now, if you would just bring down your robotic spiders so they can help us set up this...
Let me call them from their hiding places.
Oh, God.
That wasn't supposed to happen.
Yeah. Nice work with the robotic spiders there.
Well, they were supposed to scout things out, right? They didn't
trip them along.
Yeah,
at some time. And now they're running.
Now they're, well, can you blame them? Listen to that alarm, that's terrifying.
Okay.
Well, we're going to have to turn this off somehow.
Well, not necessarily. Everything's going to be fine. Why don't you just play some music and find a hiding space?
Okay. That sounds good.
How about something from the same lecture that Todd Cruzan spoke at about Europe versus America?
Sure. How about my song about Europe?
An anti-Europe song would be appropriate now.
We'll play that one.
Okay, perfect.
We are now going to hear a traditional European ballad written by my comrade, Jonathan Colton. Are you ready to sing the song?
I'm ready to sing the song.
Can we have a little, is there any light that can shine on Jonathan?
Amen. Yeah. Can everyone see me now? Thank you.
Thank you for seeing me. This is called Over There.
Take a boat, take a plane, go to London, go to Spain. Take a train from Amsterdam to Monaco. Bring a loved one if you think that they enjoy things that stink, 'cause everything is different over there. When you're in Belgium, you can't eat a lot of mayonnaise with your frites, and no one will say, hey, that's too much mayonnaise. Enjoy the German sausage halls, eat some Italian meatballs, but I hope you don't want a Twinkie, because they don't have Hostess Twinkies over there. Over there, you'll never feel at ease, 'cause there's not much soap and there's too much cheese, and everyone wears clogs and rides on trains. Make you regret that you ever saved their asses in World War II. Don't make me go over there, 'cause I enjoy my freedom here, and I enjoy light colored beer. I like to take showers, and I like to brush my teeth every day, twice a day. They say that there's a place in France where the naked ladies dance. You can find it if you ask around. There's a hole there in the wall where the men can see it all. The men don't care, because they chew their underwear. The underwear they chew costs $1.92. The men go around with their ding-dongs hanging down. Over there, you never feel at ease, 'cause there's not much soap and there's too much cheese, and everyone wears clogs and rides on trains. Over there, they make you regret that you ever saved their asses in World War II. Don't make me go over there. Don't make me go.
Hey, Jonathan. That was a very nice song. You're just kidding, though. I mean, because you... This is Jonathan Colton, our musical director.
I just want to say for the record, I have nothing against Europeans.
You buy cheese from Europe by mail.
I buy cheese from Europe by mail. Yes, that is correct. I mean, thank you.